Back to the Beat. Bulls Beat continues with Derek Sharp.
So football is over, but we got plenty more the rest of the spring, the rest of the 2023-2024 USF Athletics season. As far as play-by-play goes, we'll just be baseball and softball the rest of the way, and we'll tell you what happened this weekend. We'll also remind you that on Bulls Beat, we'll be able to present interviews to you. I'm sure some golf and tennis in the next couple weeks as it's conference tournament time. And thumbnail golf, especially the women's team, look like they're NCAA tournament bound. For both tennis teams, they are going to have to win the conference tournament, which just begins in a couple of days. But before we get to all that, softball. And it's been quite a season for the Bulls, and of course quite a week after the win in Gainesville against Florida, for the first time winning there in 12 years, and for the first time coinciding with that, beating the Gators in 27 attempts. But then could they carry it over? And if you just looked at Friday night's result, you'd say no, but you got to realize one thing. Their opponent's good, and Wichita State has not been swept in a conference series since 2015. So losing one game to them is going to happen. Winning the series is what you needed to do if you're the Bulls to have the answer to the question of, was there a letdown after the Gators? Still, it was a letdown on Friday night because of the fact the Bulls had so many chances to score. This Wichita State team came into town just barely above 500. They played an amazing schedule. They started off with practically every game being against a ranked opponent, including plenty from the SEC. In other words, anytime they lost, it was to a really good team. It's why their computer ranking was in the top 50. The Bulls were outside the top 50. And as we said on Friday's show, really good offensive team. Not quite as scary up and down the lineup, but one of the all-time leaders in softball history in the college level, Addison Barnard, who got one on Sunday but didn't get one until then. And then CeCe Wong, she was the one who 2 years ago at the junior college level hit 580 with 27 homers and 91 RBI. And she was the one that put the Bulls in a bad spot on Friday. They put themselves in a bad spot, straining runners against Lauren Cooper, who did not strike anybody out on Friday, gave up seven hits, walked three, and hit two more. That's not exactly a winning pitching line, but the Bulls helped her out by straining 12 runners, particularly in the second inning when they got two on and could not advance them with the sack bunt. It just had that feel like the Bulls were missing out on way too many opportunities, and Wichita State took advantage, I think, of a tired Peyton Dixon. She threw 133 pitches against the Gators, and she was tremendous in that game, only walked one. Well, she walked five, including Wong and Barnard to start the third. She got around that. You could understand her being careful with those two. But then in the top of the fourth, she walked Caroline Talent, who's a 200 hitter, and then walked a pinch hitter, Jessica Garcia, to load the bases, and Wichita took advantage, whereas the Bulls had the bases loaded three times in this game. Twice didn't score, once only managed one run. Kristen Nelson, who, as we mentioned on Friday's show, above 500 in conference play, batting average, had a bloop single, and nothing bloopy about this. And now CeCe Wong. All you got to do is fall behind 1-0 and try and retire CeCe Wong and Addison Barnard. That's why those walks really kill you earlier in the inning. See if she can keep it 1-0, but I don't. Based on stats, if we're basing stuff on stats, the chances aren't that great. 11 homers, 35 RBI, and looking to bust this thing open for Wichita. And she just did. Smashes it deep to center field, and it's gone. CeCe Wong, grand slam.
You could tell a couple things are going on there. First of all, Wichita very fired up, brought some good fans, and they were always vocal in the dugout. It was a very competitive series. And the wind was blowing, and it was blowing out, so she didn't need it on that one. 5-0, the Bulls did actually threatened to make an amazing rally against Wichita, has faltered in a couple of its series defeats. They, remember, had lost three series, including their last two, and in each of their three conference series, their pitching could not hold a late lead, but 5-0 turned out to be enough of a lead, even though the Bulls started to convert their scoring opportunities, and we'll play one such example because it carried over to the weekend.
Oh, that ball, it's got underneath by Elliott, deep to right field, and it's going to bounce at the base of the wall. Two runners had to hold, but they're both going to score. Olivia Elliott, a two-run bomb of a double, and it's 5-3.
And there was still nobody out. Obviously, a runner at second base. But Bailey DiPaolo, who has been great, flew out. And then a chance to score maybe on a fly out to left field where the Bulls couldn't quite tag up in time. Great diving catch. And that rally ended there. And then the Bulls just got a two-out walk in the bottom of the seventh. But you just knew that the runs were there to be had. I think the key was going to be to jump ahead early. And man, did the Bulls do that. After losing Friday night 5-3, they got enough runs by a lot, as it turned out, in the first inning alone to win Saturday.
And could not score and left the bases loaded a couple of times. This is a big pitch right here on 0-2. Here it is. And Rivera smashes it, and that is coming through right there. That should bring two home. It will. Just what I'm talking about. The Bulls jump ahead 2-0. Alon Rivera crushes that 0-2 pitch, and the Bulls have the lead. 3-1 to her, and she smashes that ball. That looks like it could go, and it just goes off the top of the wall. That'll be an easy RBI double for Dania, and it's 4-0. Well, we wanted to see the Bulls jump ahead early. Have they ever here today?
Boy, were Alana Rivera and Dania Brooks huge in this game. Rivera, already the Bulls' leader in batting average, went 3-for-3. Here's how impressive and consistent her bat has been this season. You figure if you're hitting 360-something, that you've got at least a few three-hit games. That was actually her first of the season. Meanwhile, Dania Brooks, who has, well, starting with the Gator game, settled into the third base role as she got a couple of chances last weekend against Memphis. And that third base, not positioned so much, but combination of offense and defense has been something that Ken Erickson's had to tinker with all year. Well, more Dania Brooks coming up in just a little bit. But we need to talk about Belle Sarja, and she needs to be the pitcher of the week in the AAC. Even with two saves and a win last weekend as the Bulls swept Memphis, her ERA in conference games had been, coming into Friday, 5-3-6 with four losses. She, frankly, had not done well in that middle start until the win against Memphis, which is a team that only has four wins all year. So what could she do against the Wichita State Shockers? Merely shut them out on a one-hitter where she faced the minimum. Just crazy. Now, CeCe Wong came into the weekend fourth in the country in batting average, along with the power, which you just heard on display. Well, they had actually squared off. Belle Sarja's Florida Southwestern State and CeCe Wong's McLennan Junior College met for the national championship at the junior college level 2 years ago, and Sarja got her for an 0-for-3 performance in game one of the best of three finals, and then it was a closer game, 7-6, where Sarja came in and got the last 10 outs, and the W, she actually walked Wong, but had the success against her. That didn't mean she was just going to get her out every time, but she walked her to start the game, and a rare mistake by Addison Barnard, who hit into a ground ball, fielder's choice. So Barnard was at first with one out, and Taylor Sitlacek hit a ball deep to left field. It was a 3-2 pitch. Barnard was stealing, and she actually did not know the ball got hit. She slid in head first to second base while the ball was getting caught in left field, and that's an easy double play with Alexa Galligani throwing down to first base. So we're not thinking at that time, hey, Belle Sarja faced the minimum, but that she did. Kept the ball low in the zone, got help from her defense, particularly on the other time that CeCe Wong had reached base with the first and lone hit of the day. Here's that play and the final out.
That ball is line, could duck in. Oh, Kathy Garcia Soto dives, turns around, and gets the double play. Are you serious? SportsCenter, you don't even have to look at anything else. That is your number one play of the day. It was a flare into right field that should have dropped in, but Kathy Garcia Soto said, nah, that ain't going to happen, and I'm going to turn it into a double play with the dive and the dime. Trying to become the second player to shut out Wichita this year, and it's been a while since Valentine's Day, and it looks like it's going to happen. High fly ball, Kathy Garcia Soto nabs it, and the Bulls, Belle Sarja, blanks Wichita State.
Just incredible, and also just incredible that Kathy Garcia Soto did not land on the top 10. Clearly ESPN SportsCenter has an axe to grind against the Bulls, because I'm only half kidding. What she did Saturday and Sunday, get ready to hear that, did not make the top 10. More importantly is what Belle Sarja did, namely extend the streak of shutout innings against Wichita State to beyond 11, because remember that CeCe Wong slam ended the scoring in the fourth inning there. But as far as I could tell, I went back 10 years and didn't have the records to go back beyond that. That is the only time that an opposing pitcher has faced the minimum in a complete game victory situation against Wichita. They actually got no hit by Oklahoma State 2 years ago, but had two walk and got stranded on base. And they've been one hit several times. But this was the only time that I could see anyway that that has happened, as far as 21 up and none of them left on base. And although it wasn't the story, hopefully you also saw my video just to show how knowledgeable of the rules the man is, but also how cool he is about it. The fifth and final run in that Saturday shutout.
And that ball is flared, could be caught in foul ground by the third baseman, and it is. Top step of the dugout, and Nelson makes the grab. And what was the call there? The run comes home.
And what's amazing about the video is Ken Erickson didn't actually see her go into the dugout, but he figured it out, turned around, and basically pointed to home and pointed to third base because he knew the rule, which I didn't and a lot of people didn't. When that happens, if there are runners on base, they advance, even though it's an out. And that's how the Bulls got their fifth run. And again, go to my social media page. I put it up on Sunday morning, actually. Our coach knows a little bit about the softball rules. So Peyton Dixon matched that, or just keep Wichita State's bats under control. She allowed two solo homers, including to Addison Barnard, as we said on the air. I look back every single place they've been this year for a weekend anyway, not midweek. And obviously in their home series, she has gotten a home run at least. And as a team, Wichita State leads the conference by 18 over the next best team. That's Charlotte as far as home runs, 56. The Bulls have 13 as a team. I'm sorry, make it 14. As Dania Brooks, Kathy Garcia Soto, and yes, Belle Sarja did the thing. Here's the rest of the series clinching finale highlights.
Dania put one in play for an infield single, her first time up today. Bulls down 2-1. Starting off the bottom of the fourth inning. Oh, lines that ball deep to left field. It's going. It's gone. Dania Brooks hammers that ball. We were talking about how Wichita has the advantage in home runs over everybody they play. But Derek's kid said, we're even now. 2-2. First career home run for Dania Brooks.
Cooper is letting out yells and screams. All she's done is thrown some changeups and had a ball get caught at the fence. But, hey. She's a fiery sword, 5'4". And it's smashed down the left field line. She's not yelling now. I am. And the Bulls have the lead. Dania Brooks. There's a new DB in town. Coming up huge. 3-2 South Florida. Just brought up the minimum in a softball game. And that one is rocketed. Kathy Garcia Soto does it again.
Elliot, I thought, had a look at it. But it was going to land in front of her, and she was just ready to scoop it. And then, meanwhile, flying through the air with the greatest of ease in front of her, straight backwards. SportsCenter, you didn't see the play she made yesterday. Somehow it didn't make the top 10. You better get that one.
Delivers 2-1, and same pitch, just misses. So she'd been getting that particular call. That one was closer than the previous two. And CeCe Wong is just licking her chops on deck as that wind you are hearing is blowing out to right field with a slugging, scary left-hander coming up.
Fastball right to Marissa Trimalpe. She runs to the bag and ends the deal. A little surprised that Nelson with Wong on deck was swinging 3-1, but Belle Sarja, not quite the masterpiece material of her one-hitter, but against this team, that's a veritable masterpiece. Belle was the bell of the weekend for the Bulls.
And another reason I wanted to start the show a little bit later on a Monday was to wait for the updates on the RPI, and we've got them. And the Bulls jump up 10 more spots by winning that series. They were 72 going into Gainesville. That jumped them to 63. Now they're at 53. First the conference standings, then the NCAA tournament outlook. Because the Bulls were 4-8 at one point, they're still in the bottom half of the league. Even though they're 9-9, which usually means you're right in the middle, they're actually 7th out of 10 teams. FAU at 13-5 lost 2 of 3 in Denton, Texas, and so that means there are 3 teams a game behind. Tulsa, Charlotte, and North Texas. Then UAB swept last place Memphis. Now, UAB below 500 overall, so even though they're ahead of the Bulls in the standings by two games and have head-to-head, they have no chance in an at-large. The Bulls do. Wichita is actually in sixth place, which is crazy, considering they're the reigning champ at 10-8 now, and the Bulls seventh place at 9-9, two up on East Carolina, who they play next. And you probably have to say it this way, they're going to have to sweep. They have two road trips at ECU, which is respectable, ranked 83rd, but they'll end the regular season at UTSA, which is in the mid-200s. So there's a lot to get to between now and the end of the regular season. The main point is, A, the Bulls got a big week of games. They're going to get a lot of weekly honors, and they came through huge against a very challenging opponent. Nine games left, three more conference series. The conference tournament is in Wichita. They are in a good spot, but they got to keep it going. And as we said on the broadcast, this definitely is reminiscent of women's basketball this year, where the conference seeding, I don't think, makes a difference. I'd say you probably don't want to have to play Wichita in the first game because the Shockers are hosting, but the Bulls just showed they can certainly get to them. The difference between women's basketball and softball is it's not going to be everybody playing for just one spot in the NCAA tournament. I'd be stunned if multiple teams don't get in from the American. But remember, at the women's basketball AAC tournament, you had a three-way tie for first place. All these teams were celebrating, putting out on social media, hey, they picked us to finish here, and here we are champs. And they almost all three lost their first game. One seed Tulsa did lose. By the way, their top scorer, Tamara Poindexter, one of the best players in the country, is in the transfer portal. The two seed, again, tied for first place, North Texas, lost their first game to the number 10 seed Rice, which went on to win the whole thing and challenge LSU in the first round of the NCAA. And the only team of the three that tied for first place in women's basketball that won a game at all in Fort Worth needed triple overtime against the last place team. That was Temple against Tulane. Then they lost in the semis. I think something similarly wild is unfolding in softball, but credit FAU for being the team that has gotten through the first 6 weeks. That's two-thirds of the schedule in first place by itself, even though they dropped two of three, the Owls, to North Texas this weekend. That put North Texas, along with Tulsa, which won two of three against East Carolina, including in run rule on Sunday. And then Charlotte, thanks to its sweep of next-to-last UTSA, is in that three-way tie. And then there's UAB, which just barely, we mentioned, swept Memphis easy in the first game, but then 2-1 and 1-0 UAB. Quite the story as far as the Bulls. 9-9 in the league, and again, Ken Erickson mentioned it on Bullseye. This is a conference that is right behind the Power Five. Sixth best conference, can expect to get multiple teams in the NCAA tournament. Baseball, we're definitely not there. It's East Carolina and everybody else. The Bulls are at the high end of those everybody else's, but could not improve their computer ranking. They dropped 10 spots down to 87 with losing two of three in New Orleans. Tulane, actually, after winning Saturday's game, had the same overall record as the Bulls. Now the Bulls are 21-15 and have a chance to pile up some wins, you would hope, at home. We'll get to that in a second. But as good as the pitching was last weekend, especially Hunter Mink, who had gone CG and 8-plus and grabbing a couple of wins, he did not have it on Friday against a dangerous team, and the walks really started to pile up, not just for him, but particularly in the third inning when he walked the bases loaded on just 13 pitches. That's when things started to slip big time. Green Wave scored four times in that inning, led 5-1, and the Bulls did not have much of a chance. In fact, they lost that game 11-3 and got run ruled Saturday, but the Friday game was more lopsided, if you will. Luke Flatta, who's a transfer who had pitched a lot of winning-type performances, just didn't get the relief support, got his first win for Tulane, and Hunter Mink fell to 3-4. Good to see Rafael Betancourt have a three-hit day, but not good to see the Bulls walk 13 as a team. Mink, those three we mentioned, were the only three, but he gave up six runs, and then a handful of relievers would walk a combined 10. Why was that more lopsided than getting run ruled? Because the Bulls, even though they were down 6-1 through two innings on Saturday, started to rally back. Pulled to within 6-4 on RBI by Ben Rosenblum and Matt Rose. Both had good weekends. That was in the fourth inning. But Tulane answered right back with a two spot against Jack Siebert, who only lasted the four. Joey Vellini gave the Bulls two solid middle relief innings. Again, they were down 8-4. Had the bases loaded in the sixth, but Drew Brutcher struck out. Then the game only got out of hand. Actually, it Should have been run rule in the seventh as Nick Pineda gave up four runs and Tulane had first and third with one out, just needing one more run for the run rule, hit into a double play, eventually got the 14-4 win with a run in the bottom of the eighth. So despite all that, the Bulls knew if they won on Sunday, they would be no worse than a third place tie. That's thanks to sweeping Wichita last weekend. And did they have to sweat it out? But they got it. 9-8 after jumping ahead 4-0, Eric Snow and Joaquin Moncay RBI single in the second inning, then Rafael Betancourt. Bulls actually only got out hit 12-10. Walks were a little bit better in this situation with just five in the game. And after a three-hit day for Betancourt, it was Ben Rosenblum's time, and boy, did he keep it going on Sunday. Bulls knew if they'd been able to salvage the series finale, they would no worse be tied for third place, and that's exactly the case. Ben Rosenblum, 4-for-4 on this day. Not great pitching by any means until the very end. We'll get there in a second. The Bulls win it 9-8. They're up 4-0 as Snow, Joaquin Moncay, and Betancourt all drove in runs, but Tulane got the lead with three runs in the bottom of the fourth inning, a two-out RBI single, and you were concerned until the top of the fifth when Jackson Mayo drilled one with the wind to straightaway center, and Joaquin Moncay, his first homer of the year, a two-run blast to left, made it 8-6. However, Dominic Madonna, who was so great last midweek, came on in the seventh, and Tulane got the game tied. A double by Jackson Lynn, and then with two outs, T.O. Banks hits one to center with a runner on third. Jackson Mayo had to all-out dive to try and keep the lead, and he just missed it, turned into a triple, and you were concerned that Tulane would take the lead. But here comes Chandler Dorsey to get a strikeout, and he plowed through the rest of the way. 3 1/3 innings. Of course, he had last weekend gotten two saves and a win, so he'd been huge, and he was everything in this series finale going the distance, including having no issues in the bottom of the 10th after the Bulls scored in the top half. Marcus Brodell, a big double to begin it. Moncay, a great sack bunt. And then Matt Rose against a tough pitcher on a 1-2 pitch, curveball with the infield drawn in, belted it up the middle. Drew Brutcher actually lined into a double play, so Dorsey had to, you know, maintain that one-run lead, and he had no problems doing it. So not how you wanted it to play out, but the Bulls, as I mentioned, 7-5 through 4 weeks of conference play, 21-15 overall, which is actually tied with UTSA for second-best record in the league. East Carolina overall is 27-8, a game behind UTSA in the standings. Oh, by the way, those top two teams, the Bulls haven't played either. They will play them back-to-back on the road in 2.5 weeks from now. But the next 2 weeks, they are flat-out at home, which is very unusual for 8 straight at home this time of year when you got conference games. But Tuesday against FGCU, hosting Rice, which is in last place. Then FAU comes to town next weekend and wrap it around to Tuesday, April the 30th, a home game with Stetson. It's an important 8-game homestand to pile up some wins and then back-to-back incredibly difficult road trips. Sandwiched in between those, by the way, will be a trip to Gainesville for a midweek. So full standings check. UTSA is alone in first place after taking 2 of 3 in Memphis. It looked like East Carolina, which had to sweep to be tied with the Roadrunners, was going to do exactly that. Run ruled Charlotte Friday, shut them out. More great pitching Saturday, 5-1. And then Sunday, something went wrong on the way to a sweep. Namely, a grand slam by Charlotte's Carson Bain in the top of the ninth. And Charlotte wins that one game. Talk about Bulls needing one game to avoid a sweep. Imagine how Charlotte feels after grabbing that. And you look at it. Remember, 10 teams in the league, so 2 are not going to Clearwater. And Charlotte, had it gotten swept, would be tied for 9th place right now, or 8th place as it were, but as it stands, UTSA 9-3, East Carolina 8-4. As we mentioned, the Bulls are tied for 3rd, but technically alone in 3rd because the team they're tied with, they swept. That's Wichita State, which lost the opener to FAU but got the next 2, including the strange final score of 10-5 in 8 innings. No, that's not a run rule. That's a FAU had a curfew time and had to leave town. Now, to be fair, the Shockers jumped ahead 7-0, and FAU would have had to score, you know, 5 runs in the top of the ninth to extend the game, but didn't get that chance technically. FAU drops to 6-6, tied with Memphis right in the middle of the pack. Then Tulane and Charlotte are tied for 7th at 5-7. And then your bottom two teams are UAB and Rice. They played each other. Remember, Rice, we'll talk more about them on Friday's show, is coming to town.
just actually beat UAB in a series, and the Rice pitching staff has given them a chance in every game. They beat UAB 4-2, then in a crazy game that was 1-1 through 11 innings. Teams exchanged two spots in the 12th before Rice won it in 15 and had a chance for a sweep there, but lost another low-scoring game to the Blazers on Sunday. So right now, UAB and Rice occupy the bottom two spots in the conference, and remember, the Bulls have yet to play either of those teams. Rice this weekend, and actually UAB comes to town the final weekend of the regular season. The new RPI rankings have East Carolina at 12, UTSA, again the conference leader, down at 84, Bulls at 87, Charlotte 90, and Wichita 100. Rice is last in the league by a lot, 239 in the RPI. FGCU, which comes to town tomorrow, actually just took 2 of 3 at Stetson, and is in a four-way tie atop the A-Sun at 10-5, but overall 17-17. However, that 500 record includes a midweek game against the Bulls down in Fort Myers a month ago. We'll be on the air with baseball at 5:50 on Tuesday night. Check in on your highest-ranked teams all year long so far anyway. I know the men's basketball team got in the top 25, but men's track and field has been in the top 10, and they got an amazing performance. Samino Abdul-Rashid was right behind national champ from Houston, Sean Maswanguay, in the 100-meter final of the prestigious Tom Jones Memorial two-day event in Gainesville. If you had to go usfbulls.com, you can see all of the results, more top 10 results in school history. The highest-ranked women's team this year, certainly women's golf. They'll be headed to the NCAA tournament like they were last year. Difference is, again, they don't have to sit on the bubble and watch the selection show only to find out where they're going. But they want to finish strong with maybe a conference tournament championship. I'll be headed to Southern Hills for the second round Tuesday and the final round Wednesday to see if women's golf can win a conference championship. Remember last year, they basically were right on the NCAA tournament bubble. If they finished where they finished at the conference, which was fifth, they were going to be right on the bubble. This year they could finish last out of 12th. They're not going to do that, but they're aiming for first, and then they'll just find out next week where they're headed for the NCAA tournament. There are 6 regional hosts and really only a couple close. One is in Auburn, one is in Winston-Salem. Those would seem to be where the Bulls are headed. Other possibilities: College Station, East Lansing, Vegas, and out in Washington. We'll talk more about the men's golf situation later in the week because they host in Bel Air beginning Friday. And women's tennis will be playing in Dallas, we believe, on Thursday. As we're taping this, we still don't know the draw for the conference tournament, which starts on Wednesday. Bulls won't be playing then. That's the bottom 4 teams. And then they'll either be the 4th seed, which means they get a bye to the quarters on Friday, which is good. The problem is the 1 seed is the host and has already swept the Bulls this year. That's SMU. If they're the 5 seed, they'll play Thursday. Looks like the Bulls, Rice, and FAU are going to be in that 4, 5, and 6 range. And frankly, if you're the Bulls, you would rather be 6 than 4. It means you avoid SMU on your half of the draw. We'll learn the men's tennis draw a little bit later in the week. Thanks for dropping by the podcast page for Bulls Beat. I'm Derek Sharp.